Let's have the discussion. You're listening to Canter with Scott and Paul.
Welcome to Canter. We have a very special guest with a touching story to tell, which highlights some of the issues presented to patients in Australia currently. Liz, thank you so much for joining us to tell us your story.
Thank you for having me.
So Liz, can you give us a bit of background about yourself? How did you become a patient in regards to medical cannabis?
So I've joined the Club of Canter. In 2015, I was originally diagnosed with vulva cancer, and I had surgery for that and got the all clear, and 3 days later was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I went through all of the treatment that they recommended, so surgery and chemo, radiotherapy, and each stage I got side effects that they put to you that, oh, you know, some people will get these, but we don't expect you will get them, and then you get them and you have no information and you don't understand the longer term impact as well. So from that point, using all the traditional medications to cope with the side effects and the ongoing pain issues, I ran out of options really, really fast. So I had heard of cannabis oil and some of the good reports about it. So I researched it more and decided that really that was my choice. So I did commence the process.
And it's one of the frustrating aspects, isn't it, that people have to do their own research. And certainly in 2015, prior to federal legalization of medicinal cannabis, it's quite
frustrating. I questioned a few oncologists and they wouldn't comment on it.
Yeah, and that's another concern, isn't it? I think there's licensing and these doctors have to protect themselves. And I guess most of them have that same reaction where they don't want to discuss it because they're concerned about repercussions or they're not educated on it.
Yeah, one of my friends, her oncologist did suggest it to her, which I was absolutely surprised. She was having treatment a little bit earlier than me, and she's in another state, so that may explain
it.
I know the differences between state to state can vary enormously.
Absolutely.
But I couldn't find anyone locally that I could go to. My GP wasn't willing or wasn't knowledgeable enough to feel confident in going down that path with me. And I was exploring that, I was also on a wait list to see a private pain specialist. That wait list was over 12 months to just get my foot in the door to sit in front of him, let alone seek any form of treatment from him. So for that 12 months, my GP was trying to manage it and doing all the things according to guidelines, but my pain levels were just unmanageable. We could not control them. And, you know, we went down the opiate path. That creates a whole world of other issues. And the current push to reduce opioid use makes doctors really reluctant to explore higher doses or up and going up and down on them, or even mixing other drugs in that might help. So you become really hamstrung. You're caught between, if you choose to take no medications, you can't function because you can't even walk because the pain is so intense, or you take all of the medications and you deal with lots of side effects and you have to take more medication to deal with those side effects. At times I've been on up to 17 different medications. At the moment I'm still on 10, and occasionally a couple more pop in when we're doing various different treatment, you know, you kind of feel like you go in circles, and you know that there's another medication there that potentially would be of great benefit, but no one is even willing to allow you to try it.
And
so until these clinics came about, the corporate ones that a lot of people don't like, I know that they talk about corporate greed and they're concerned that they're only in it for the money. For me, that was the only way I could access it, and it cost a lot of money. It became unaffordable, but that was my only access to it unless I went to the black market.
Can you
give, and you know, the black market alone has issues.
Can you give the listener a bit of an idea of what sort of costs, what sort of expenses you're up for to go through the legal channels?
The initial cost for the clinic to apply on my behalf was $300. Whilst they made the application, you know, there were consults in between, and we did it via video link because I couldn't travel to them, which was really helpful. So there were charges for those consults as well, and then you have to do monthly monitoring, and there's a charge each monitoring consult of $80 as well. So I, like, to give you a timeline, I first contacted the clinic in July 2018. My first appointment was the following month, so it took a whole month, and my first script was not until the 23rd of the 10th, 18. So it took me 3 months to even get a script, even accessing it that way.
Wow, that's horrible.
And yeah, and then they asked, part of the holdup was that they had asked for more information, so we had to give them a little bit more. And I think they were still in the previous processing, where now they've removed the state level regulations, and you go straight into a portal and it's 2 days.
Okay.
So that has improved. That's what I've heard. I believe that's current, 2 days processing time now. But the wait of 3 months to access a medication that not only improved my quality of life, gave me relief in this day and age, I find unbelievable. You know, if I was, you know, in a car accident and had multiple injuries, they wouldn't withhold morphine because they recognise I'm in pain at that moment, but they will withhold cannabis.
It's very frustrating, just this fear of issuing cannabis to...
I think that, you know, for the first time in history, perhaps consumers have more information than the professionals.
It seems that way. Definitely seems that way.
I think they find it threatening.
Yeah, you may be correct. Yeah, there may be a bit of fear of, someone else having a bit more knowledge on the medical side of this plant, this substance. That's certainly, there could be something there.
Sorry, I was going to just go back to the fees. In total, so I, from the first script to when I ceased in July the following year, so July 2019, the total costs for accessing through the clinic alone, I spent $700. And then my oil was on top.
Yeah, so that's without medication. So you haven't even got any medicine in your in your hands, and you've already spent $700.
Before I even have it in my hot little hand.
That's ridiculous.
Then the expense of the actual medication?
Extremely. I think the first script was just over $800. That included transport to me.
And how long would that script, all that dose, last you?
So that was 3 bottles. If I bought 3 bottles at a time, it reduced the price slightly. So I don't know, divide the 800 by three bottles, yeah. 270, something like that.
Yep.
And
around
a bottle would last
one
you.
Bottle.
A bottle would last you.
If because at the start they like to go very low dose, yep. and then you're coming up. So at the start, a bottle would last me a month. But then as my dose went up, and I got to the top dose of 3 mils for the day, a bottle's 40 mils. So it was not a month.
Yeah, that's next to impossible, isn't it, unless you're very wealthy.
And as well, that dose actually didn't cover my pain. That was still using it in conjunction with everything else that I was on. So if I wanted to come off everything else, my dose, it would have to be a different product, and I dread to think what the cost would be.
Yeah. So how did the cannabis actually help you? Can you explain what responses you received?
Yeah, so I probably need to tell you a little of the other medical history as well, because that's part of the reason that I used it. So through all the cancer treatments, particularly the chemo, it did significant damage to my nervous system, and I've got peripheral nerve damage. So I've got numb fingertips, numb toes, and my skin often feels raw. Clothes really, really irritate my skin. I've got clothes on now, so don't worry. So, you know, that was a pain issue. But I'd also injured my back when I was 23 nursing, and I'd learned to manage that. I'd had to stop nursing, but I'd been managing it. After the chemo, my back just went, well, it's a party I'm joining, and it deteriorated to the point that my left leg became partially paralysed. And I have numbness in both legs now. So I now rely on a walker. I've got the additional sciatic type issues and pain. So that was really what I got approved the cannabis for, that sciatic pain. They like to approve for neuropathic pain.
Okay.
So, you know, they were looking at, really, that would help that. But I also have now lots of arthritis, various forms in different joints. So the stiffness that happens in my feet and hands prevents me from walking it sometimes. I can't use my hands often. They're frozen. When I started taking the oil, the stiffness disappeared. Like, I could use my hands again and I could walk without pain. I literally was walking with tears in my eyes from the pain previously. And when I used it, I could walk. Like, I still had the other, you know, physical issues with my back. That wasn't going to change, but I could walk.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It was like something had switched in my body, and I assume it's the anti-inflammatory action of it, that it's pulled down all the arthritic type inflammation, and that's been like the biggest benefit of all. Overall, it helps other pain that I have, and it has helped, you know, like the feeling of my skin being so raw, it reduce that dramatically as well.
So, Liz, there are people out there that challenge the medical efficacy of cannabis and suggest it's not actually a medicine. What do you say to those people, having firsthand experienced the benefits?
I'm sorry for their ignorance, and I really would say please read more. I think the drug has been stigmatized and demonized for the benefit of whatever. You can argue, you know, to your blue in the face of why it was. The fact is it was, and it shouldn't have been. And you know, at the end of the day, it is a plant that Mother Nature has given us, and we use lots of plants as medicine. That's the basis of the majority of plants, whether we synthesize them in the end. The original medication has come from a plant.
So you're an articulate, intelligent person. People that imagine someone that consumes cannabis losing their mind and becoming, a major threat to the community. How do you view that?
Look, I'm 48. I don't want to say I'm average because I think everyone's unique. I mean, I'm an average middle-aged wife, mother. I've run my own business. I've been a nurse. I've done foster care. I've done. I've been a child educator. I've gone to uni. I've studied. I've helped in the community. I've done volunteering. I've been, as a CFA volunteer firefighter when I was much younger and fitter. I've been on school councils and been president. I've done lots. I'm just, like the lady you see walking around down the street. I'm just an average Joe Blow.
Yeah. So, Liz, now that you've been consuming the cannabis for several years, how do your family view the effects that it has on you? Do they feel that it's improving not just your life but their life as well?
We are a little careful around
the children.
Our discussion around the medication around the children, mm-hmm. simply because we have a family primarily of teenagers now.
Yes, yeah.
We have six children all up from 30 and our youngest is about to turn 15. Mm-hmm. And we have several of them still living at home.
Okay.
Because we have always been really mindful about educating them about drugs, they're mm-hmm. aware of it and they understand the risks that it poses.
Yeah.
But when I've, then turned around and said, look, I'm using this medication, particularly the youngest one said, Mum, you're a druggie. And so we sat down and had that conversation about the difference and that, all drugs can be used as medication. And that's the operative word, use, mm-hmm. not abuse.
Yes, exactly.
So, this is a medication that people have recognised is helpful and I am going to try it because what we're doing now isn't working. The impact on my family of my journey, it's their journey as well. It has impacted every corner of their lives.
Yeah.
Because Mum can't drive anymore. So Mum's no longer available at the drop of the hat to, run around doing things with them.
Can we discuss the driving issue briefly?
Yeah.
So, Liz.
It's a big one.
Yeah, so you've lost a great deal of independence based solely mm-hmm. on the inability to drive. Now, this is something that I'm quite passionate about. Like there's studies indicating certain periods of impairment with cannabis, yet we have to have a fear of testing positive to cannabis several days after consumption, and that's the sole reason that you've had to give up driving, isn't it?
Yeah. When you go through the process of like I did to access, one of the things that you sign and agree is that you will not drive whilst on treatment.
So you're precluded.
So I have always been a law-abiding citizen. I get my license cheaper because I've never had a speeding fine or any criminal kind of anything. So for me to think about breaking the law, promotes lots of anxiety. I don't want to do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. I understand there are laws that keep us all safe and they're for a good reason. But in this law, it needs to be adjusted. It is, it's not up to date. It really has to be reviewed. I can take the top dose of opioid products, whatever dose you're talking about, I can take, the highest recommended dose. And if I say I don't think I'm affected, I drive. But if I've taken a maintenance dose of oil, which is only in a couple of mils, and I'm tested, I will lose my license. I get tested and I'm on, you know, morphine or Targin or Endone or methadone or, you know, any one of those, I won't lose my license.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy.
I would probably be more impaired, if I'm absolutely honest. Yeah. The high doses, you know, you become tolerant to them. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it affects my – I actually wouldn't drive when I was on no cannabis and on the other drugs because I was worried it was affecting my driving anyway. But I had the choice. Yeah. I could still get in.
Legally you could, yeah.
And yeah. Yes. And at the moment I do have choice, but I'd be breaking the law.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you would be criminalised. It's a criminal offence.
And then, you know, what does that do to my family?
Exactly. Exactly. Horrible situation.
Yeah. So, you know, the further on with the impact, it's not only, you know, the impact that my independence and somewhat my dignity has disappeared by not being able to drive because now I have to rely on other people. I'll give you an example. Today I had to go to the doctor. So I'm not able to drive. My husband is at work. So I catch an Uber and I've got my walking frame and I call my Uber. There's no Uber Assist in my area, so I have to just call a normal one. And, you know, and I say, I'm sorry, will my frame fit in the car? And this guy turns up in the tiniest car you've ever seen. Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. And then with, you know, 10 minutes, he's jamming this thing in, couldn't fit it in, finally got in and we're off. And then the same on the return, you know, the man turns up to, and I say, can you put my walker in? He has to empty his boot, get my walker in, and then he's get it out. I have to wait for him to bring it around to me and then I'm right. You know, the indignity of that. As a 48-year-old woman who has previously been completely independent is something that I'm still learning to come to terms with. And for my husband, you know, we run our own business. We've been very fortunate to have been in the position we are that we don't lose, you know, our income as such and our jobs because he has to take time off to care for me or drive me somewhere or drive our children somewhere. Yeah. The downside of it is you don't work, you don't get paid. So, you know, we're able to juggle things. So, you know, that impact is huge as well on him and in his lifestyle.
So you're still taking the prescription CBD?
No, I've had to cease because I just could not justify the cost to our family budget as an ongoing thing. Initially I was told that the price would come down quite rapidly. They expected that as domestic producers and suppliers came on board, the price would come down. But I can't, you know, keep paying though. It was working out at the top dose. It was costing me, you know, the 3 bottles for the month almost, for 2 months, sorry, if I sat at the top dose. And if I wanted to go higher, then we had to go through the application process again, which I wasn't willing to pay more.
Do you feel this is a problem? I mean, it must be a problem that's presented to a vast number of cancer sufferers and cancer patients. That they are having to resort to this black market supply.
Yeah, I've chatted with a few people around the tracks and a lot of people are extremely interested but don't know how to access it. They ask their GP and their GP sort of balks at it and that's as far as they get. So what I have found, interestingly, though, is there is a huge amount of the older population accessing it illegally.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's something that I've started to learn as well, that particularly people over 60 are resorting to black market sourcing.
It's honestly, I think I know more older people that are using it than aren't at the moment.
Yeah. And it helps them with, it's not just cancer sufferers, is it? I mean, you mentioned arthritis earlier. You know, even arthritis sufferers, they find that they can sleep far better when they've consumed some cannabis. And, you know, there's a lot of GPs that just won't prescribe for these sort of ailments. I'm not even sure what the legal regulations are with regards to it as a first choice medication for pain.
Well, it's used as a last resort medication. It
currently, isn't it? Yeah,
it's the opposite,
which is crazy. You know, we would put opiates into someone prior to cannabis. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and you know I think the long term effects of using opioids are far worse.
Yeah,
the short term effects. It's about 6 months ago. It might even be longer. Might be 12 months. I finally accessed the pain specialist, and he just changed me to a different type of opioid. And I had to withdraw off one, and all along I kept raising, you know, I'm really concerned about the addiction side of this. I'm not really comfortable with it. And they kept saying to me, look, all research shows if we're using it for pain, you're not actually going to get addicted. You're not using it to get high. So, you know, we're not that concerned around addiction. So mentally I probably wasn't addicted, but physically my body went through 3 days of awful, awful withdrawals where I just wanted literally someone shoot me. I'm curled up in a car. Just leave me alone. That's one die. Yeah. For 3 days coming off it. Now, I stopped the oil and I had nothing like that. I could just stop, you know, the stiffness and everything increased. And what I've done with my doctors is instead of using the oil, we're using higher levels of steroids to bring the inflammation down. But then the side effects of that I'm already seeing at the moment. I've got a fractured femur, and the jury is out as to whether it's caused by the drugs that we use to control all of the inflammation, or it's late onset from one of the chemo drugs, or is it late onset from some of the hormone treatments that I did for 12 months and had to cease because I couldn't tolerate the side effects. You know, so we can't pick why it's happened, but it is potentially using this other drug to pull the inflammation down that has created the issue. Mm-hmm. You know, and that could have been avoided.
Yeah, and it's so consistent when you mention the withdrawals, and it's so consistent with other stories I've heard that people are just dealing with the cannabis so much easier than the opiates that they are actively prescribed. We're just in this weird point of time where we almost have to go backwards to go forwards, given how prominent cannabis was in ancient medicine, even up till maybe 120 years ago. We almost have to go back to that, don't we? And start again in some aspects.
We've forgotten to remember as a group, I think, as humankind has forgotten to remember what did work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're correct. Yeah. So do you find you also get a bit of a mental uplift? I know I've dealt with my mother-in-law had late stage cancer, and we were full-time carers for her. And we noticed with depression, and when she was starting to get a bit down on herself, the cannabis almost instantly made her feel a bit better about her day. Do you notice? Yeah,
I find that as well. I think what it allows your mind to do is it distracts it from the pain. Yeah. So you do feel better.
You can be more present with the people around you.
Yeah, it's a really difficult thing to describe. But, you know, if I'm just on all of the pharma drugs, the tablets, I am, I've got some chemo fog that lurks every now and then still. but I am so dull mentally, I'm not able to focus on anything. I like, you know, reading, painting, drawing, sewing, all those things. I just cannot focus on
the things you love to do, the things that make you you. Yeah, it's
they're all those things, like drawing, painting.
That's it, yeah. And, you know, you're taken away from those things that remind you of
who you are.
Of who you are and what you love to do.
Yeah, because, you know, part of the journey, you become a patient, you don't become a person. Yeah. Unfortunately, you are just a number to be treated, and particularly in the public system, you
So that's how you feel? You feel genuinely, you're not actually, a face. You're a number. You're a name on a piece of paper.
I'm just a number I used to call the public clinics the cattle call clinics, because they call everyone in at the same time, and you all sit there for maybe 4 hours while they work their way through who's turned up.
Yeah,
it's a cattle call.
Yeah.
And literally, I don't know how many times, I went to a clinic and you see a different oncologist every time. So there's no consistency of care. And they all have their own personal opinions and professional beliefs.
Yeah, that must be frustrating.
And personal bias.
Yeah, absolutely.
They give you different opinions every single time. You can't, go to an appointment, they say one thing, go away and think about it. You go away, you think about it, and then the next person that is in front of you says, oh, no, we're not considering that, and then goes off.
So there's no continuity in your course of treatment and the way you approach things?
None at all. And even, with the side effects, I felt inadequately prepared for potentially what I was going to face if I agreed to the treatment, solely because they talk about the immediate side effects and how they are managed. They lightly touch on some of the rarer side effects and the longer side effects, but it's a paragraph of an information
nowhere near sufficient.
And when you raise, and I've spoken to a lot of women in this situation, particularly around the hormone therapy, because it's recommended you do it for 5 years. And a lot of women have trouble finding one that they can tolerate and choose not to take it because there is the side effects affecting them so greatly, it's not worth
the benefits that they get from it.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, I tried 5 different sorts of hormone therapy and found that I couldn't tolerate any one of them. Mm-hmm. And along that way, I don't know how many of the public clinic oncologists I got very cross with, because I felt that they were not listening to what I was saying, or they didn't believe what I was saying. They poo-pooed it. Oh, no, we don't see that.
Yeah, it's a common thing I'm hearing from patients as well, that they're
Do you think that's due to the oncologists and the doctors not being fully taught or have the knowledge behind them?
I think that they are so overwhelmed in those clinics. You know, they are overpopulated. They should have half the amount of patients go through them or run 2 clinics instead of 1, that they literally do not have the time.
The time and the energy to...
Yeah, the time and the energy. I think the last public clinic I went to, and that was my deciding point to go to a private oncologist and to quit the public system. I'd sat in the clinic for literally 4 hours until my name was called. It was like 6 o'clock at night and the clinic was closing, and the lady that saw me was extremely pregnant, obviously really tired, and had had a long day, and she just wanted out of there. She didn't want to discuss anything. And when I said, you know, I'm not really tolerating this, whatever drug it was that I was using at that time, She literally said, well, I don't think that it's as bad as what you're saying. Just keep going.
Yeah, that must hurt a lot.
I literally walked out of there and thought, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Do you find nobody is listening?
Do you find you're dismissed a bit when you raise the cannabis thing with some of these oncologists and doctors?
The pain specialist that I saw, I raised with him that I was using it, and he sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, oh, do you find it useful? And I said, yeah, I think I do. And he said, well, you know, the reports I've had back is it's not that useful, so, you know, perhaps you should go off that.
Wow.
So then,
and this is a man that I waited over 12 months to see.
Wow. That's, that's horrible. So are you aware of other patients? Have you made some friends that are experiencing on the same journey as you?
I've made friends with people on the cancer journey, but not with the oil journey because it's not spoken.
Yeah, it's hush-hush.
When I was exploring, trying to find somewhere, I was asking or telling, you know, different friends, this is what I'm doing. And I started to hear a few little stories come through. And once I was on it and clearly stated to friends I am on this, more stories came through. But if you don't speak, they don't speak.
Yeah. No one wants to put their hand up first.
Yeah. And, you know, and even now that I've chosen not to use the legal cannabis, to use black market cannabis, you know, promotes extraordinary anxiety because it's breaking the law. Yeah.
And does it concern you that you know, there's no quality control involved there?
No, that's the other concern, you know. What do you actually buy? And is it pollutant-free, chemical-free? Does it have mold or God knows what growing? And what are the levels in it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I can't look at something and say, I know that if
THC,
I
how much CBD,
have this amount, I'll get this result.
And even terpenes play a major part, and I don't think any black market grower can tell you what levels of what terpenes are present in their flower.
So, and if I buy if I buy oil on the black market, the cost is still quite large. It's cheaper than the script, but it's still significant cost. If I purchase, you know, bud or flower or whatever you want to call it, I run the risk of all those things. Plus, you know, I'm also having to inhale it, which I've also got emphysema. So that's an issue itself for me. Yeah,
that's a major issue, isn't it? So you're stuck in this position of choosing the lesser of two evils, effectively, either killing the family's entire financial stability or taking risks dealing with growers
that could also kill the welfare of my family.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I sit and think, you know, what would happen if I, you know, say I went and purchased, and one, how do I find somebody to purchase? I don't, you know, I'm a straight list.
Just putting the feelers out there and approaching people that are in essence criminals.
Well, I do actually know somebody, but I then worry of the position that I put them in.
Exactly, because they're committing a crime in whether it's compassionate or not. They're committing a crime in.
And you know, I'd certainly would fight. You know, if I chose that path and I got picked up, I would fight back. But I don't want to be a precedent.
Yeah,
I don't have the energy to deal with.
Oh, absolutely not. You've got your own things to
come
focus
with
on.
That.
Yeah,
but I do feel in some ways I'm sort of boxed in. It doesn't matter what way I turn. I either have to use drugs that I know are harming me because I keep having to take more drugs to cope with those drugs, mm-hmm. or I'm a criminal. And I honestly never felt that I would be in a position that I would have to make that choice.
And you should never be in the position that you have to make that choice.
No.
It's in 2016, October 2016, when medicinal cannabis was federally legalized, we had mm-hmm. this sense of hope, didn't we, that everybody that needs it's going to be able to get it and nobody's going to have to worry. And
it's kind of like the gift that you can't open.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there in front of you, but you're not allowed to open it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, one of the most important things, if I could talk to Scott Morrison, I would love to say to him, you know, you invested. If you want to just be a money man, I don't know whether, you know, I don't want to be political, but if, you know, people and politics and these type of things are often driven by money.
If he
wants to be a money man only, forget about compassion and humanity. He invested, well, this country invested so much money in making me well, in inverted commas, or treating my cancer so I would continue to live, but they refused me the right or access in a way that I can afford to actually enjoy this life.
The one thing that does give you that increased sense of living, you're effectively semi-precluded from. So
I'm actually being excluded from life.
Yeah, that's horrible.
By virtue of not being able to access the medication.
So someone in your position, how would you structure the framework for the future? How would you go about things? Because we know that you have issues with driving. We know you have issues. Yeah, so easier access?
Easier access to the point that you could go to the doctor, have a script written, go to the chemist, and it is dispensed. So it's sitting on the chemist shelf like every other drug is.
Yeah, which makes sense, doesn't it? And then would you find a way to allow people to drive?
The laws need to be amended. I think if you have a medical condition, it should be dispensed in the same way that other drugs that are far more dangerous are dispensed with your little warning. If affected, do not operate machinery or drive a vehicle.
Yeah, you should not be having to risk a criminal record and criminal charges.
You know, and the fact that I can't drive, you know, it means I can't go to my children's basketball games. It means that I can't do the grocery shopping. I can't take them to and from school or to their jobs. I can't continue to study myself or get myself to and from my own business.
Yeah. So
if the law was amended, you know, if it meant that I had to withhold a dose in order so I could drive to a place, then have my dose, wait, you know, 2 hours, whatever they recommend, I would do that willingly.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to put a restriction around it to make themselves feel safer, you know, why can't they recognise that if it is for a medicinal purpose, you're actually punishing the person by also
you're punishing
not
the
allowing them to drive.
You're punishing the victim.
Yeah, I'm sick. Why would you punish me?
Yeah, and you can't, as it stands, you can't even consume your medication in the evening and get up in the morning feeling right that you can go and drive without getting charged. So, there was a study in Toronto done, I believe last year, where they all but confirmed that roughly after 12 hours, you're not impaired any longer. I guess these things have to be considered for the regulators.
So I take slow release opioid.
Mm-hmm.
So you know my level stays high, 24 yeah. hours, mm-hmm. but I can get into that car and drive legally.
Yeah,
at any point during the day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like this morning, I could have driven myself to the doctor and gone without, you know, all of the indignity that I did.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And drive legally. I didn't because I don't like the feeling that I might be impaired.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're a good Samaritan. You're a good person, and you're thinking about the other people out there as well. And...
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, if I thought that me driving would harm or kill somebody, I would never live with myself, and that's why I wouldn't do it. Now, if I was on cannabis oil alone, I would still drive if I could do it legally because I don't think it impairs my driving.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that as someone that's consumed a vast array of medications, you feel that the cannabis is the lesser of of all those that you've been taking.
And if I could find, you know, a steady supply of good quality, affordable oil that you know, was all legal and everything, I would be looking at trying to get off all of these other really harmful drugs.
Yeah. Yep. And it would be an exit strategy, wouldn't it?
Yep. And, you know, and if you look at the costs of it as well, you know, like the medications that I'm on, they're all on PBS. So I do get them slightly, you know, subsidised through that.
But cannabis isn't, is it?
This isn't. So that's another thing that needs to be addressed. It has to be put on PBS to make it affordable. You know, some of the drugs that they have approved, the cost to them, you know, to the government are enormous. This is the cost of what cannabis would be. It's minuscule.
We did have a discussion with a commercial cannabis cultivation or production consultant recently. Off air, he did explain that producers are currently getting their costs of production right down. And he's very optimistic that we will see a fairly significant shift in the pricing side of things potentially as early as this year. So that's some good news, I guess. So
that's some very good news. Look, I think it will happen in my lifetime.
Well,
I hope it will happen. I'm really hopeful that it will.
Yeah, I hope it happens quite soon so that you can take full benefit of it without running the gauntlet as you are currently.
Yeah. It just, I think the laws just need to catch up.
Yep.
And the way that the system works is it's just luxurious working through all the pathways to make that happen.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know why it's taken so long for it, you know, like why wasn't this done, you know, 30 years ago?
Yes, well, that's another story, isn't it? That's a whole other podcast. It's just so deep, and I think all issues regarding this plant and the way it's ingrained in people's minds, it's just so deep, and there's so much to explore. Liz,
I think you've got to overcome stigma,
stigma, you know,
and that takes time and education, and is that growing momentum, which is encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people such as yourself having the courage to talk to people like us and tell your story, it just helps keep that progression
going.
It
was a conversation with one of my daughters that made me decide that that maybe I did need to use my voice, because she said, "Mum, you know, this is history making."
Absolutely.
Do you want to be part of the change of history? And this is my 22-year-old daughter. I'm looking at her thinking, "You old soul, you."
Very wise, isn't it? Very wise. Liz, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I know it's a very emotional subject that we've discussed today, but it takes a great amount of courage for someone to do what you've done. And we can't thank you enough for coming on and discussing these issues with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It's been a pleasure, Liz, and we wish you nothing but the best with the treatment
Look,
that you
have. I am still very blessed. I actually live in a country that has quite good medical care, as frustrating as it could be.
That's
compared
true.
To other countries. Now, I could have been diagnosed with all of this and live in a country at war, and I would not have survived.
This is true.
So,
it's perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, for the frustrations, you know, there's still a lot of blessings as well.
Absolutely.
And you guys, I think, might be a blessing as well, raising awareness, so thank you.
Well, we hope we can make some sort of change. Paul, I know he's very passionate about the medical side of things as well.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you.
You're a gem.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Canter. Any guest views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and not necessarily those of the hosts. Canter strongly suggests listeners research local, state, and federal laws and regulations before conducting any cannabis-related activity.